The scripture I've chosen this morning is from Isaiah 61, verse 1. The Spirit of the Lord and the King is on me. The Lord has anointed me to announce good news to poor people. He has sent me to comfort those whose hearts have been broken. He has sent me to announce freedom for those who have been captured. He wants me to set prisoners free from their dark selves. In a few days, millions of us Americans will take a little bit of time off to say, "Happy birthday, America. You're 243 years old, and you're still going strong." A wonderful thing. The vitality and the strength of the greatest nation on earth is built on a bedrock of some of the most important documents ever written by man. There's the Continental Association document, which very few of us really have heard about, the Virginia Declaration of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, of course, the Articles of Confederation, the Constitution of the United States of America, and the Bill of Rights. These are the documents that really built the solid foundation and the solid core of the freedom that we have today. This morning, I'd like to pay particular attention to the Declaration of Independence. Almost 2.5 centuries old, the Declaration of Independence ranks as one of the most important documents and one of the most enduring documents in history. In this bold, dynamic document, our founding fathers announced to the world its break with England and justified that break through a litany of abuses suffered under the rule of King George III and the English Parliament. In London's eye, at least, our decision to stand alone was audacious, if not treasonous. After all, the Constitutional Army had some 250,000 soldiers, but only 90,000 of them appeared at any one time. U.S. population at the time was about 2.5 million people. Britain, with the most powerful navy in the world, had a population of upwards of 10 million people. So in this case, I think it was a mouse with great bravado challenging the authority of an elephant. Now, we generally give Thomas Jefferson sole credit for writing the Declaration of Independence, when in fact the document was actually written by something called the Committee of Five. Jefferson, who was a member of this Committee of Five and was long recognized for his way with words, although he was apparently a terrible speaker, was given the task of writing the first draft. Then it was edited by the committee members, principally John Adams and Benjamin Franklin. Then it was given to the entire Congress for their comments. Now, the Declaration of Independence is not a particularly long document. As presented to the Continental Congress, Jefferson's version of the Declaration was made up of 1,817 words. Congress made 68 changes. They cut 480 words, which left the finalized document word count at 1,337 words. And just as a point of interest, my talk this morning is slightly more than 2,000 words. Now, I'm not going to declare that a victory over anything, but I thought it, well, whatever. When the 56 men, and I apologize to the ladies, signed their names to the Declaration of Independence, King George ordered his soldiers to find and execute them all, putting an end to what he called a foolish revolution. So signing this Declaration of Independence was dangerous. The signers were living on borrowed time. But each of them knew that freedom meant sacrifice and perhaps the sacrifice of their own lives. Even with the debt of freedom, even with the debt of danger hanging over their heads, They went ahead and signed this marvelous and bold document. They were now marked men. On July 3rd, that magnifies when I cough, doesn't it? On July 3rd, 1776, John Adams, in a letter to his wife Abigail, said, "I'm well aware of the toll in blood and treasure that it will cost us to maintain the Declaration and support and defend these states. Yet through all the gloom, I can see rays of ravishing light and glory." Jefferson himself commented on the significance of the Declaration, saying, "May it be to the world what I believe it will be, the signal of arousing men to burst the chains and to assume the blessings of security of self-government. That form which we have substituted restores the free right to the unbounded exercise of reason and freedom of opinion. All eyes are opened or opening to the rights of men. For ourselves, let the annual return of this day forever refresh our recollections of those rights and an undiminished devotion to them all." Well, if you're listening, Tom, we do in fact let the annual return of this day forever refresh our recollections of those rights. That's why we're going to be here next Thursday. The language itself of the Declaration is eloquent, particularly in the second paragraph. "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Going back to the idea that the Declaration of Independence was in fact written by a committee, let me share this one quote from Walter Isaacson's well-known book, Benjamin Franklin, An American Life. He said on June 21st, after he had finished a draft and incorporated some changes from Adams, Jefferson delivered a copy to Franklin with a cover note far more polite than editors generally receive today. He said, "Will Dr. Franklin be so good as to peruse it and suggest such alterations as his more enlarged view of the subject will create?" Well, Franklin ended up making only a few changes, but one of the changes he made is quite profound. Using heavy backslashes, he crossed out the last three words. He crossed out the last three words of Jefferson's phrase, which were, "At that time, we hold these truths to be sacred and undeniable." Franklin wrote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident." When he chose the word sacred, Jefferson had suggested, whether he intended it or not, that the principle in question, the equality of men and their endowment by their Creator, was actually an assertion of religion. And by changing it to self-evident, Franklin made it an assertion of reality. Now, we honor the phrase, "all men are created equal," today, but in Jefferson's time, equal didn't apply to all men. As a matter of full disclosure, when the Declaration of Independence was written, the term "men" referred only to those who were able to be landowners, which at the time meant only rich white men. The term excluded anyone of color and excluded women. We've certainly come a long way since then, and clearly we've got a long way to go. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, if these rights were bestowed on us by our Creator, they are unalienable, they are absolute, and no man, no power on earth can remove these rights, and no one can with impunity infringe on the rights of others. The concept that these rights were a gift to man from God and not a gift from government is closely related to Jefferson's overall religious beliefs. I think that when Jefferson said these rights came from the Creator, nature's God, he was invoking not one people's God, but the Puritan God and the Roman Catholic God and the Hebrew God and all the other gods, recognizing the varied beliefs of the new country. Throughout his life, Jefferson was a student of theology and religious studies and morality. His religious beliefs, however, did not follow the Orthodox Christianity of his time. He believed that religion was in fact a matter between man and God. It was private. Like many other founding fathers, Jefferson was more comfortable with deism, rational religion, and Unitarianism, although at the same time he was in agreement with the moral prospects and perceptions of Christianity. Jefferson considered the teachings of Jesus as having the most sublime and benevolent code of morals which has been ever offered to man. He also held that the pure teaching of Jesus appeared to have been appropriated by some of Jesus' early followers, resulting in a Bible that both contained diamonds of wisdom and the dung of ancient political agendas. Now, they're his words, not mine. So Jefferson, being Jefferson, created his own Bible. And we know that today as the Jefferson Bible, but he called it the Life and Morals of Jesus of Nazareth. Now, this was Jefferson's effort to extract what he considered to be the pertinent doctrine of Jesus by removing sections of the New Testament that contain supernatural aspects, as well as the perceived misinterpretations he believed that had been added by the four evangelists. Using a razor, Jefferson cut out and rearranged selected verses from the book of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in chronological order, mingling experts from one text to another in order to create a single continuing narrative. And after completing the Life and Morals about 1820, Jefferson shared it with only a few friends. He never allowed it to be published during his lifetime. But if you'd like to see it, just go to Google and you can download it, as with almost everything else. Now, this is the man who set this philosophy of government called democracy in motion. This is the man who believed that religion is a private manner between he and his God, and that God, our Creator, has endowed us with certain unalienable rights that no man, no government can take away or interfere with or modify. Are the truths of Jefferson's time as self-evident today? Are all men in fact created equal? Are all men blessed equally by these inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Do we celebrate and safeguard these rights in others as vigorously as we safeguard these rights in ourselves, our families, our communities, our nations? Do we safeguard these rights? Ronald Reagan said that America is a shining city on a hill whose beacon light guides freedom-loving people everywhere. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 14, I can cover this up while I cough. That's startling. It says, "You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a basket. Instead, they put it on a lampstand, and it gives light to everyone in the house." I still remember the words that William Safire wrote for then and disgraced Vice President Spiro Agnew. "In the United States today, we have more than our share of nattering nabobs of negativism. They have formed their own 4-H club, the hopeless, the hysterical hypochondriacs of history. Man had a way with words. Now, if I pay undue attention to these chattering crones of cable, and they're my words, all around me might seem a little dim, getting darker, bleaker. After all, the world is flat, we all know that. So the counsel is, don't get too close to the edge of the world because you might fall off. But then again, think of John Adams' words, who said, yet all through the gloom I can see the rays of ravishing light and glory. On October 16th, 1854, before Abraham Lincoln became president, he said, let us readopt the Declaration of Independence, and with it, the practices and policy which harmonize with it. So Lincoln recognized and used the strength of this declaration. Thomas Jefferson said, for ourselves, let the annual return of this day forever refresh our recollections of these rights and an undiminished devotion to them. Well, maybe this Thursday, Independence Day, after all the picnics and the hot dogs are over and after we've all gone to bed having seen a myriad of fireworks, maybe we'll all take a minute out to think about our sweet land of liberty and the countless blessings bestowed on us by our Creator. The truth is, we should never take these blessings for granted. We should never think of surrendering our right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and the countless blessings we enjoy each and every day, surrender these to a tyrant, any tyrant. These fundamental rights belong to everyone, all of the time, not just to us, whoever us happens to be, or whenever now is. The next time you have an opportunity to repeat the Pledge of Allegiance, when you get to that part that says, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty for all, stand tall with your hand over your heart and give thanks. I know I will, and I do. I want to close this morning with another song. It's a little folksier than the song the Cruises sang. But it's the last stanza of Lee Greenwood's famous song, God Bless the USA, in which he said, I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her today, because there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. Happy birthday, America. Amen.